Have you ever heard a strange noise in the middle of the night?
Hello?
Ever seen something you couldn't quite explain?
What's that?
Ever been visited by a loved one in a dream?
What are you?
Psychic mediums Katie Manning and Michelle Lyons-Polito talk about it all. Welcome to the Psychic on the Scene podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back for another amazing episode in 2025 for Psychic on the Scene. And so with me as always is our amazing producer, co-host, and friend, Dee Scott.
Hi. I'm going to say good morning.
I know. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Yeah, that's it.
And my other wonderful friend and psychic medium and co-host, Michelle Lyons-Polito.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Oh, in case people don't know, I'm Katie Manning. I'm psychic medium too. I didn't introduce myself, just in case, for Psychic on the Scene. And we have a special guest with us tonight, and I'm going to have Michelle introduce our guest.
And we have a wonderful guest tonight. With us is Natasha Ruiz. She's a family nurse practitioner, and she is a practitioner at Synergy Integrative Health. Did I call it? Okay. And I've had the pleasure of working with her with my family members. I've had an amazing experience with her, and we've talked about what I do and what she does, and I thought it'd be great to have her on as a guest. So welcome.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Happy New Year.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm so glad you're here for, and the perfect time for this when people are thinking and more focused about their health. And I actually think, and I'm sure Michelle has encountered this too. Maybe you have as well, Natasha, that, you know, we've gone through a few years of oddity.
Yep.
With kind of our health and what we're doing and what's going on. And I think people really feel, I think it started a little bit in 2024, but really feel motivated, activated, kind of like the 80s, it feels like to me, guys. I hate to say it, but it feels like everybody kind of having a lot more hope and really investing back into their own emotional and physical health.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that?
Yes, I agree. I think, you know, over the past 4 years, we've really seen people become more aware of their health, obviously for, you know, COVID reasons. When that happened to all of us, I would say a lot of people felt out of control, right?
Like, agreed. Yes.
It's scary.
It wasn't something that they could really control. And I mean, to be quite frank, many people thought they were just going to die, like spontaneously die. That's what the first 3 months of COVID was like. It was really, really scary. And I think,
well,
you know,
think about this. Everybody, not only is everybody hidden, but everybody made that kind of, and we know they were writing about it on Facebook and they were talking, they were kind of like, well, if this is the end of the world, I'm eating all the carbs I want to eat. And if this is, I'm going to do whatever. And people kind of went, whether it was addiction, or you know, just poor eating or poor health, they just went right off the deep end.
Yeah.
Right off the deep end. I don't know if that happened in Europe, but it definitely happened in the United States.
Yes. And you know, and so what I practice is something called functional medicine. People also know it like integrative medicine. It's pretty much the same thing. I would say what makes it different. Yeah. What makes it different from conventional medicine is we have a very holistic, comprehensive approach to health. So we're not so divided, right, in systems where you see different specialists for different things. We have a very holistic approach and we understand that everything is connected, including the brain. And I think this is probably one of my biggest topics that I talk about is the connection, you know, to your, from your brain health to your, the rest of your body. In conventional medicine, we very much separate that out, right? If you have depression or anxiety or OCD or whatever you have, ADHD, which we see a lot of nowadays, very rarely, if you go to your doctor, is there a biological workup to ask if there's any physiological connection to your brain health? It is ridiculous to me, to be quite honest. And so the standard of care is to be referred out. And I'm not saying that I'm against that kind of support. I think that there's the right place and time for psychiatrists and therapists. And I think they can be very helpful. But it needs to be in conjunction with a workup, a biological, physiological workup, looking at the food that you're eating, your stress levels, your nutritional levels, your hormone levels, infections and viruses, all of these things, right? So one of the interesting things that we learned through COVID is that a lot of people have really sort of inadequate immune systems, right?
Yes.
And one of the things Absolutely. That we can control is what I just talked about, the food that we put in our bodies, how much sleep we get at night, mm-hmm. managing our stress as much as we possibly can, and being real and moving our bodies, right? Being consistent with these different things over time create strength and health and, you know, a strong immune system. And so that feels very empowering, but it takes a lot of buy-in and understanding to really be committed to that. Right.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to say, I met Natasha through bringing two different family members to see her. And I go to a Synergy as well for my, just unbelievable hot flashes. I was referred to Jennifer Goldstock, who works there with you also, and for the female hormone stuff, changed my life. So I brought a family member who is doing phenomenally, by the way. So I won't mention who that is, but a huge change. And I'll throw my son under the bus. I brought Didi in because he was having a lot of symptoms, a lot of OCD, ADHD. He gets anxiety pretty badly. And so, you know, he tried various things. I brought him in and the workup was amazing because you do blood work, you do, well, there's the poop sample. My son will kill me, but yeah. Like you said, like Natasha said, your digestive tract. What's that? You said like 80% of your immune system is in your digestive tract.
Yes.
It turns out that, you know, he is on a very specific, and you know, it's not like you guys sell stuff. We had to buy your stuff. You just send us out and we get the supplements from a website. He is so much better. I can't even, you'll see what I mean, but he has, and then we found out with the blood work that he has a gene mutation called MTHFR, known as the motherfucker gene.
Yes.
And that runs on my husband's side. And so it's, you can't break down folate.
Yep. Folic acid.
Folic acid. And yep. I mean, how many people take a vitamin with folic acid?
So, many.
You know, we take, well, you can tell the version. I can never remember. It's
methylfolate.
Methylfolate now. And interestingly enough, I was talking to other family members on that side of the family. They all had miscarriage after miscarriage, and they were taking pregnancy vitamins with the folate.
That oh, wow. Yeah. Because that's really high in that. Yep.
So, yes. But.
Yeah, it's incredible. And, you know, I would say the other thing that we do that makes us sort of unique or special is it's very personalized. So when you come to right. a practice like ours, a new patient appointment is 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And very rarely do I not use the full 2 hours. Our follow-ups are about an hour. And so we go through a lot, history, family history, lifestyle stuff, assessing medications, allergies, all of those kinds of things. History is a big part of what we do. And so I think that people are really becoming more aware of their health and asking the question, why? And I always say this, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in conventional medicine, it's very what focused, what do you have, right? Because it's a very diagnosis focused system that we have. When you have a diagnosis, you have a treatment, which usually comes in the form of some kind of medication, right? Right. And because, you know, there's so much high volume in conventional medicine, your appointments are 15 minutes max typically, right?
And they don't want to hear your symptoms.
They just don't have the time. I mean, they really, it's too much, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we personalize this and we have time to discuss it, magic can happen. It really mm-hmm. can. And that's where we can figure out the why, right? So people will come to me with diagnoses of like chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia or Hashimoto's, which is an autoimmune, and we see lots of autoimmune conditions, a lot of mental health, anxiety, depression, OCD, ADHD, big ones that we see all the time. And there's more and more and more of it getting younger and younger and younger. I mean, I see kids 6, 7, 8 years old with these diagnoses and getting, you know, medicated. And again, there's no biological workup that's happening. And so simple things for kids, it can be, I mean, not to get too graphic, but some kids are pooping once a week.
Right. You
know, think about what it is. That's just all of this toxicity being built up in their system, right? That's toxic waste. And in little bodies, that becomes very inflammatory, right? So when inflammation goes, it really has no boundary. It can go to their brain. It can go to their skin. It can go to their gut. Like, it can go anywhere. And so fixing and fine tuning these things, getting their GI system working in a better way, getting them eating better, right? Cleaner food, more organic, more whole food focused, getting rid of some of these, you know, food colorings and dye. We talk about things like gluten and dairy and high sugar, processed foods. All of these things are so toxic to not only adults, but very much children as well. And so once we get clear on what the landscape looks like, you can start this rebalancing act, right? Where you,
I'm going to interrupt for a second. Do you find, Natasha, that in certain regions that you guys are getting clients, that they seem to have like similar problems, similar issues? Like, maybe it is tick-borne, but maybe is it like water? Like, I know that years ago there was more of a study done in Rotterdam, Schenectady, that had higher levels for cancer and like, especially like adolescent cancer. And I mean, just by the nature of what we live around, I know that even on a personal level, I had lost, I had thyroid issues, and then I lost my gallbladder. And I had a great applied kinesiologist say, those are filter organs.
Yes.
And he said, that's why. And then I started to see, I was a Girl Scout leader, and it was one mother after another, thyroid, then gallbladder. So, and it was all in this area, to the point that one time I was in Queensbury, and I was doing a reading with a mother and daughter. And the mother said, I'm just worried about my daughter. And she goes, Mom, I'm going to be fine. And she goes, well, she's had a scary thing come up, and it had to do with her thyroid. And I kiddingly, as I'm trying to focus in, I go, oh, you're not from Rotterdam, are you? And the mother goes, yes, we are. We grew up over in I went, Jesus. Okay. So, but it was, you know, that it seems that sometimes you find out like regionally, and Albany had, because of the felt factory, there's a lot of things that are fallout from that. So do you find that, or is that a part of the exam?
Yeah. I mean, certainly we ask about environment, right? Like where you live, what city you live in, is it rural? Is it urban? Is it a house? Is it a high rise? You know, those kinds of things. As far as like collecting the data, I mean, I'm sure it's out there, and I completely agree with you. I think there's probably more clusters of those kinds of things than we actually know, because they don't want to collect that data always. You know
what I mean? They don't want that news.
They don't want it. So, but I would say, you know, just in general, it is very hard right now to be healthy in the United States of America, period. You know,
agreed.
Our soil is very depleted. Our crops are sprayed with pesticides. You hear it all the time. Our water systems are being, you know, contaminated. Our air quality, we're seeing fog. We're seeing this. We're, you know, like, it just feels like we're very much in this toxic bubble. So we really have to sort of reclaim our own health by making some very conscious decisions that, you know, at the very least can benefit us and make us more resilient in a culture like this. And if you've ever been to Europe, you will feel the contrast immediately.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. So I have been to Ireland twice, Scotland once, and Italy this past year. And the biggest thing, and many of these travelers, these are the haunted trips with Katie. Many of these travelers have traveled with us before. We have all commented on the second we get to Ireland, we can eat bread. All of us. We can eat our weight in bread, and nobody's waking up the next day feeling like they're hungover with the gluten reaction.
Yes.
Can eat pasta. I don't drink, but the crowd I was with really imbibed on a lot of the Italian wines and stuff, and they were not having the reactions that they normally have.
Nitrate, phosphate, and all that.
Right, and all that. So 100%, and almost everything, like especially in Ireland, is farm to table. It tastes different. The meat tastes different.
Yes. Yes.
All of it.
Last year I went to Italy and Greece and Turkey for like an extended trip, and it was my first time. I was sitting eating dinner with my daughter, and I was cutting into a tomato, and I ate a piece of the tomato and I started to cry. And my daughter was like, "Are you okay? Why are you crying?" And I said, "I've never tasted this before." And she said, "Mom, that's a tomato." And I said, "I've never had this."
Yep. Oh, that was my experience in Ireland. It might have been the first time, and everybody kept, before we went to Ireland, kept saying, "Oh, good luck with the food. Food is going to be crappy in Ireland." First of all, everything was 5-star. When I say to you, it was beyond. It's very seasonal. So you in foreign countries, you're eating what's seasonal.
Yeah.
Right. Which is what they used to say about like the wheel of the year. You're supposed to, and Barb used to say that all the time too. Michelle, you're supposed to be eating what's seasonal. That's what we're made to do.
That's what she's always saying. Oh, it's fall. Eat those pumpkin seeds. Get rid of your intestinal parasites.
Right.
Yes.
1,000%. Yeah.
I'm sure you noticed as well, right? It's not just about farm to table food. There's so many other things that you recognize there that supports healthy living, right? They very much walk everywhere. Everything, right? There's a lot of steps. So
I didn't gain an ounce. If anything, I think I lost weight when I was in Italy. We walked so freaking much.
Yes.
And the funny thing is everything for them, like if you say, "Where's that hotel?" They'll say, "Oh, it's just down a block or two." Well, they're not telling you that's 3 miles.
Right. And to them, that was a deal.
And you're lugging your bag. You're like, "Oh my God, down a block or two. What in the hell is he talking about? They're trying to kill me."
That's how they live, right? And
right.
And that's part of the reason why their health is so much better than ours is, to be quite honest. They overall, and I'm generalizing, but a lot less stress. They value family and community. It's a lot more affordable. They're not working 70 hours a week. Like
1,000%.
So many other things that support health. So when you have that experience of going to Europe and then coming back, it's really hard, to be quite honest. When I came back, it was just
culture shock.
Yeah, it really was. It was hard. So
And doing the job that you do, like you said, like it's an emotional thing that, and you must get a lot of intuition connected with complaints that are coming in. Mm-hmm. Not to say that you're not going through and doing the blood work as we were talking about before, and really kind of going through the questionnaire, but intuitively you must be very empathetic and be reading and feeling information off of people all the time, Natasha.
Yes. So I think that's another thing that sort of connected Michelle and I immediately. Absolutely. Energetically was I've had those experiences of whatever you would call that intuition with a patient, because my space is really clear. It's focused. It's not rushed. And so I have that, I hate to say luxury, but I do, of being really present with people. And when you are so focused and present,
right,
you can really feel someone's energy. And, you know, I've had the experience of like ordering a test, not really knowing what that test was, and then it coming back positive and me needing to know why I ordered it. I just ordered it. Or me sort of interrupting someone and saying what they were going to say next to me. And how did you know I was going to say that kind of thing? So, yes, there's a lot of intuition over time when you practice this kind of medicine, because you have to have this connection with, I think it's really important, right? How many people don't want to go to their doctors anymore? I hear it all the time.
Most everyone doesn't want to go to their
doctor. I feel heard. I feel like I'm being dismissed. They get mad at me if I don't do certain things.
I don't take my medication.
I'm embarrassed by my weight, by my blood pressure, by telling them I'm eating certain things. You know, these are that's not very therapeutic, right? How are we going to heal people if people are feeling embarrassed, ashamed, afraid, all of these things of having conversations with their healthcare provider? So it's a very different experience. It's very honest, and there's no judgment. And I say that right up front. It's very much about the person's journey and me just being sort of a privileged person, being part of that and helping in any way that I can. And that's how we lay the groundwork. And we meet people where they're at. And then we slowly try and get them and set goals realistically so that they have that experience of being successful and you know, contributing to their own overall health and wellness, right? Getting people off of medication slowly sometimes, getting their symptoms to improve, right? And I think, Michelle, for your son, you know, at his young age of having this experience of, oh my goodness, the food that I eat and moving my body and sleeping really well has helped me so much with my anxiety and my, right? Yeah. What a gift you gave him.
Oh. Huge. And you know, I knew it was a gift, but until we were in the office going over the results, and we go over, it was, I think it was 15 vials of blood, which he was like, I love this feeling. He loves giving blood because he said he feels better. So I don't know what that's about, but it's interesting because of all the stuff we learn. And because he'd have this symptom and he'd say, you're spending the time going through everything we've tested for. And then bingo, this is why you feel that way.
Yes.
And the look on his face that he is empowered.
And he's such a smart kid. And people are smart in general, but you know, we have the time for him to ask questions and get clarity, right? So there's a lot of education that happens during these appointments as well. And education is a really important piece of this, I would say, you know, for everybody, but especially for young people.
What would you say right now? I mean, and you kind of were talking about it before, Natasha. What are the top five things that people are either complaining about or they are getting diagnosed with right now?
Yeah, I would say top five, probably at the top, which is really concerning, is mental health. A lot of mental health stuff. It's very rare that I see someone who's not struggling in some way, whether it's focus and attention, anxiety, depression, OCD.
OCD seems to be a biggie with a lot of my clients lately.
It's a big one. And you know, it's evolved, right? So there's so much right now that's happening that wasn't happening 30 years ago, right? We'd already talked about food and stress and toxins and all of these things. Now you add on this whole digital world. Right. And the digital piece of this is creating what we call, you know, a dopamine addiction. And we're all guilty of it. I don't care who you are.
I agree.
Yep. 100%.
You've experienced it. If you've been sort of like, you know, stuck on your phone for more than 10 or 15 minutes and you find yourself just scrolling, that's dopamine, right? But if you think about that in relationship to the younger brains that we're seeing, right, kids, and how that translates 10, 15 years into their life, into their 20s and 30s, that can be problematic. So definitely mental health is up there. A lot of autoimmune, especially since COVID, I would say. A lot of autoimmune stuff. And I would say non-specific autoimmune. So people who are sort of experiencing all these different kinds of symptoms and their doctor or specialist will say, it looks, quote, autoimmune, but I'm not sure what it is kind of thing.
That's a catch-all for a lot of practitioners.
Yeah. I'm not sure what this is, but it looks autoimmune, seeing a lot of that, a lot of metabolic issues. So metabolic refers to like pre-diabetes, diabetes, which then leads to cardiovascular issues like hypertension, high cholesterol, those kinds of things. So that's been a constant for a long time. A lot of GI stuff. So, you know, what's interesting with GI, and GI is gastrointestinal, right? So people think or have been led to believe either by their healthcare providers or just by society that their normal sort of patterns, bowel patterns or whatever, or symptoms are like their norm. So, you know, oftentimes I'll meet and they'll say, you know, I have bloating and pain and this, and I'll say, okay, you know, how are your bowel movements? Oh, normal. And then I'm like, oh no, I got to rephrase that. You know, like, how often are you going? Oh, twice a week. Nope, not normal. No, that's not normal. Well, I was told that was my normal. No.
What a stupid thing. Sorry.
Not, but people don't know, right? Same with, oh, I have a sensitive belly. I go, you know, 8 times a day and I can barely make it to the bathroom with such urgency. That's not normal either. Neither is bloating, neither is pain, neither is reflux, neither is nausea. None of that is normal on a regular basis. Sure, we're all going to experience that if we ate too much or a holiday or, you know, spicy food or a stomach bug or whatever. Yes. But to have that on a regular basis, no, definitely.
What do you say to the top three or more? The offenders that we are ingesting that are really like attacking our systems.
Yeah. At the very top is gluten all day long.
Yeah.
And it is, and you don't have to have celiac disease to be a victim of gluten. You know, it is very inflammatory, and it's one of the most, inflammatory things that we can eat. It's something that's sprayed with pesticides, with glyphosate, Roundup, right? So many.
I'll tell you a side story to that. Yeah. Years ago, my daughter had been born, and so she was little, and Nicholas was in like junior high, and I'd started to see that applied kinesiologist. And Dr. Wayne Hogan, and I do not think he's in practice anymore, but he was a chiropractor and he did that. And so while he's doing the chiropractic work, he is doing the vials over my body and he's got the nurse in there and he's, you know, holding things. He goes, no reaction to this, doing the, you tighten your arm, tighten your leg and all that stuff. So at one point he holds a vial over my tummy and he goes, she has a wheat intolerance. Didn't say gluten. He said wheat intolerance. And I said, oh, I'm a little lactose intolerant too. And he leaned down on my face and he said, sweetheart, that's like saying you're a little pregnant. So he said that then, whatever year that was. So I'm going to take a stab at it. Let's say it was like 2007 or something. There wasn't anything out there that was gluten-free really on the market yet. No. You really had to eat completely. So when he told me to do that, and it was an overnight thing. And that very timetable, I was starting to have some hormonal changes. I was home and I was cleaning and I had been getting migraines on and off, really bad migraines. And didn't even know at first they were migraines. And one time I lost my speech. I thought I had a stroke. And I happened to be cleaning. I had Dr. Oz on and they had on a woman who is known for having celiac. And she was probably one of the first people that came out publicly of having this as a star. Yeah. And she was on the show and he said, let's look at the scale. And he said, there's a, like a beginning and a point. And the first part of it, it stopped me in my tracks. It said like a wheat intolerance or gluten intolerance, all leading up to like the major issues with celiac, like across this. And it first started with, he said, you might have things like severe migraines. And when I say to you, I was like, what? So he was right. Dr. Hogan was right. And I didn't quite associate it all like together. And then that whole thing was seeing that chart that it kept like it was going in progression. And basically, too, if you continued thinking that, you know, I'm going to eat whole bread, whole grain bread, and that's good for me. And it was or oatmeal. It's going to make you better. And it really was hurting your body, hurting your gut.
Yeah.
One of the first things of removing that from my body was a complete game changer physically, mentally, with all of those things, to the point that I'm so like hypersensitive to it now. If I am exposed to it and I didn't know, within a day or two, I will start to itch on my legs, almost like I've got hives and there's nothing there. And that's my initial reaction to gluten. So but when he was diagnosing that or talking about it, and he explained that, he said all of our wheat, he said, is sprayed, he said, with chemicals. He yeah. said, so it's become Frankenstein wheat. He said, so you're not getting what your grandparents were getting.
Right.
And yeah. that's where that came from. So I can remember all of that, like, you know, talk about your whole childhood ripped away, Wonder Bread, everything. Like, you know, all of those feel goods. But nobody talks about that there's also a component of that, Natasha, that is the withdrawal from the candida.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're absolutely right. And so I think, you know, that's a really good point, Katie, especially like, you know, people really think that they have to have GI symptoms to have this sensitivity or
yeah.
to gluten and wheat. And that's not so. So I have some people who have no GI issues and they have migraines, they have joint pain, they oh, have rashes, eczema, psoriasis, they have some sort of autoimmune condition. Really this sort of inflammatory response doesn't have any boundaries. So you can have lots of different symptoms that you wouldn't necessarily correlate with a sensitivity to gluten and wheat, but it's one of the top ones.
When I cut it out of my diet, my arthritis disappears. It's amazing. Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah, hurts. It definitely does. That and the sugars.
Sugar. Yeah.
Sugar. Processed sugar.
Huge. Sugar is huge. And that's another one when you talk about withdrawal, right? And I think people really need to be coached around that because that's when you throw in the towel, right? So people get on the wagon a little bit where they're like, all right, I'm going to do Whole 30 or I'm going to, you know, do some of these programs, which are great. I'm actually a big proponent of Whole 30. I think it's a great starting point. But if you don't know about this or read about this, there can be significant withdrawal, flu-like symptoms for some people within the first 24 or 48 hours that can last for like 7 to 10 days for some people. If you go in knowing that, you can tolerate it a little bit better and kind of stick through it. But for those people who don't know, they often throw in the towel because the cravings become big. And they, you know, it's like cocaine and it's like heroin.
I was going to say, I think it's in the same receptor in the brain, correct?
Same receptor. Yeah.
Jesus same God. Receptor.
Yes.
I'm very cognitive of the sugar because I want it, you know, that's always been the go-to comfort. I mean, that's what we grew up on, you know.
Yes.
But I know that if I have a little bit, that my receptor wants a lot of it.
Mm. Yes. And it's, you know, it's difficult to sort of be self-aware of that because, you know, a little bite here, a little bite there. I mean, it adds up over time and we're all guilty of like just taking a little bit here and there, but throughout the day that really adds up. And as we get older, we become less metabolically, you know, stable. So a little bit of sugar can cause a big response for us, right? And can cause some of us to really be very insulin resistant over time, which then has a whole host of other symptoms associated with it. And we're seeing a lot of that in clinic right now. And we have been for many, many years. But I don't know. I think people are motivated now. Now that we're coming.
I do too.
It's a change. There's a shift.
And I, you know, what else is nice is I work with a lot of families, and I think that that's sort of unique too, where I really encourage yes. families as a whole to kind of do these things together. They hold each other accountable. Kids really love it too. Like if you say to a kid, listen, I, you know, have this goal in mind. And, you know, if you see me not getting on the treadmill today or not going for my walk or, you know, not meditate or whatever, nudge me a little bit. I need some of that, you know, support.
They love to nudge their parents.
They love it. They love it.
Well, the psychological component too is, and I'm guilty of this, that, all right, so say it's a snowy day.
Yeah.
And the kids would be home from school. I would make sure I prepped ahead of time to have hot chocolate, marshmallows, and cookies and brownies to bake and make and maybe, you know, sloppy joes.
Yep.
So all of those things. And my kids still say, like, oh, that reminds me of a snow day. No. So they wind up being happy memories and like good things around that.
Attached to bad food, yeah.
Right. But it's basically what we have to do is to train ourselves, train our families to have, you can still have all those good, feel good memories,
yes,
you know, but not around cupcakes or frosting or right. Even though it's good, but yeah, to try a different tradition. And I know that for myself, I'm guilty of that myself.
Well, I'll say, you know, here's where I'll sort of praise technology a little bit. Nowadays, like there are so many resources. There's so many really talented people out there who have podcasts, who have written books, who have websites and blogs and social media, all this free information. You can actually, like, there are lots of ways to make brownies and cookies healthier. Now we're doing, like, you know, protein-based hot chocolate for winter with less sugar and more protein. There are so many ways to kind of still have those treats, but, you know, make them a little bit healthier. So
absolutely,
you can kind of have them, but you just have to modify it a little bit. And
it's kind of fun. It's like you're a mad scientist in the kitchen.
Yes. And again, kids, if you do have kids, they really like to be a part of that, you know, creative process and, you know, trying different things and taste testing. And
if they're invested, they're going to be a lot more likely to.
That is nice if you can do that with your kids and your grandkids. Yes. So you said, I that took you down a rabbit hole, but you said gluten and you said, and we said sugar. What else would you say are big no-nos?
So processed food. I mean, right. If you take it down to what we value in our culture, if we're working 70 or 80 hours a week, who has time to meal prep and cook?
Nobody.
Not many people. We talk a lot about it, and I think people try it for a short period of time, but they quickly fall off the wagon with that. And it's really, really important, because if you're not prepping and you're not cooking, you're making something quick. And something quick is often something processed. And processed food is a killer. It just is. It's a killer for your immune system. It's very inflammatory metabolically. It kills your metabolism. And it just becomes, you know, like this hamster wheel. It's hard to get off. And, you know, there's a lot of understanding around our food industry putting in chemicals that make people addicted to those processed foods. I've had people sit in my office and say, I can't give up Doritos. I can't give up Cheez-Its. I can't give up Goldfish. I'm not giving it up. I crave it so badly. If I don't have it, I feel like I'm going to die. They're not kidding.
I agree with that. But the sugar, when I was like really addicted to sugar, I can tell you that I would be like craving it. I'd wake up craving it. And once you break it, then you're good. Like your body isn't asking for it anymore.
Right.
But I understand that.
Yeah. Processed foods. Next, I would say seed oils. So there's a lot of talk about seed oils nowadays and them being very inflammatory. So being really aware and reading labels.
Like canola and vegetable oil. It's not made out. It's made out of the seeds. And
seeds.
Omegas.
Avocado oil, olive oil, those are the ones to really focus on. Coconut oil. But the seed oils can be very inflammatory. And there's a lot of research out there now connecting it to cancer and other diseases out there. So that's another big one. So we did. And then there's dairy. I know. And I think more people are sad about dairy than they are about gluten, which is quite interesting. I think there are some good gluten alternatives out there, but I would say people have to be careful with gluten substitution. I've had some people who get so excited. I'm going to do this. I'm going to eliminate gluten. And then they come back in 3 months and they're 20 pounds heavier. And I go, okay, tell me what happened. Well, they went hog wild in the gluten-free aisle of, you know, supermarket. The truth
trust
is,
me, right? They make the best coconut macaroons that are gluten free, and the container is this. And I think that's one serving. that's my serving. That's my serving, right? Yeah, it's light.
It's gluten free.
It's light.
It doesn't count. It's gluten free.
Right. I can't have it in the house because it's like, again, it's like I'm an addict, a food addict.
So, you know, I like those options for kids, like for a birthday party, a sleepover, a special occasion. You know, I want to create healthy relationships with food and not make them feel so anxious about going to a party or a celebration.
Right.
not having an option. So that's where I'm like, okay, you know, have the gluten-free cookie or brownie or whatever. I would say for adults, you know, we are a little bit more strict about that because metabolically we're sensitive to it. And we really have to be a little bit more consistent. Not to say that you can't have a cookie or a brownie once in a while, right? But not on the regular. And some of us really have to be more careful about it than others.
Yeah, I don't think there's any good dairy substitutes that I've ever, almond milk, but like my thing is cheese. I love cheddar cheese.
Cheese is hard. What I would say is, a little bit in moderation is okay. As long as you don't have a really bad response to it, like GI wise, or some people get really itchy or their skin gets, you know, they have eczema, psoriasis. If you see that kind of quick connection, then you have to be a little bit more careful. I would say goat's milk tends to be a lot less inflammatory than cow's milk for some people. So that can be a nice option as well. Trader Joe's has some good goat cheese. They have like goat cheese crumbles. They have goat cheese slices that you can use as an alternative, if like, especially for a kid, if you want like a grilled cheese kind of thing on gluten-free bread. So there are some options that are a little bit better, but yeah, dairy is very inflammatory. Cow's milk especially is very.
They have four stomachs. So baby cows, when they drink that, they have four stomachs to digest that. Goats at least just have two. So I guess we're a little bit closer.
Right. So I would say, yes, dairy is another one. So we did gluten, dairy, sugar, seed oils, and processed foods just in general, I would say, are the big ones that you have to be really aware of. So, it can feel overwhelming for a lot of people. So I would say the other part of what we do is coaching, right? And trying to set some goals. I think, you know, this idea of having an annual physical with your healthcare provider is sometimes just too much time in between appointments, especially
goals.
Right. You get like gung ho about it in the first month or two. And then month three or four, you're like, I'm doing it, but not great. Month six, done. And then you got six more months to go. And guess what happens? You show up and they go, okay, have you done X, Y, and Z? And you're like, oh, I don't know. Not really. Well, your labs look terrible and it shows me that you're not doing right. It feels very like accusatory and shameful. And it doesn't have to be that way. So I would say, you know, oftentimes, especially at the beginning of our process, I'll see patients every 3 to 4 months for a while. And they feel that success, they see their labs and compare them. So we'll check them a little bit more frequently, just so that you can see on paper how things are changing. It's not just coincidence that you're feeling better, like things are shifting. And set realistic goals and do a lot of coaching with that too. So I just think we need a shift in our healthcare system and
function. Well, then I'm going to ask you kind of a taboo medical thing.
Okay.
What is your take about Lyme protocols for Lyme? And like when people say, I tested negative for Lyme, but there's like, you're talking to somebody who's already had Lyme and you're like, that's Lyme.
Chronic Lyme disease. Yeah.
You're right. Or they talk about, activated Lyme.
Yeah.
So is that a real thing? I mean, I think it is, but
yeah. So, you know, here's the truth. We live in such an endemic area, right? And upstate New York, the Northeast just in general is so endemic. There's ticks everywhere. And it's not like they even go away during these freezing cold days. They're everywhere. And so, I don't care. I always say to people like 15 years ago, if you were to ask me, could you avoid getting Lyme disease? I would be like, oh, sure. Like, don't walk in the tall grass. Don't go, you know, camping. Don't sit in the leaves. You know, all these little things that I thought really were the only people who got, you know, tick-borne illness. Wrong. That is just wrong. First of all, these ticks now can be super tiny little nymphs that it doesn't have to be tall grass anymore. You can walk in and mowed grass that's this high and pick up a tick in any area. Like they're just everywhere. And so now
keep in mind, my mom is from Red Hook, New York, the Poughkeepsie area.
Yeah.
And that was the Lyme disease capital.
Yeah.
And her premise was, I want to say, all right, so I'm 58 years old. Let's say 40 years ago, she said, oh, but we don't have to worry about that here. It'll never come here.
Oh,
exactly. Like, oh, all it has to do is get on a friggin' squirrel and that squirrel jumps on a, you know, whatever. Yeah, and then, or they go hunting in that area and they're bringing it back into this area. But yeah, that was the whole thing is, oh, we'll never get it around here. And if you drove in that area at the time, great big billboards talking about checking yourself and, you yeah. know, that they had it down, which they did. That's really where it like started. Yeah. But the fact that her thing was that, oh, it'll never come over here. We can't come across the river.
Here it is.
Yeah. Here it is.
Yeah.
Large and in charge. But yeah. So I'm sorry.
So yeah, I think, you know, most of us have been exposed, to be quite mm-hmm. honest. You know, big question is, why are some people super symptomatic with it and some people aren't? There are a lot of variables. There are a lot of question marks around that, whether, you know, and it's hard to sometimes connect the dots unless people like have a tick bite, have acute symptoms, and we can kind of match it up that way. Right. Sometimes that makes sense. But when someone comes in with a lot of inflammation and pain and fatigue and all of these things, when we do this big workup, the infectious disease part of it is part of the workup that we do, including looking for tick-borne infections. Even if someone says, I've never had a tick bite that I know of, that doesn't matter to me anymore. It used to feel more validating, like, oh, you have, okay, then we're going to go in this direction. Nowadays, it's just like, we have to assume that most of us have been exposed. But what's interesting is, you know, oftentimes if we're suspicious or even confirmed by serology that someone has tick-borne infections, when we work on those other things that we just talked about, diet, stress, mm-hmm. sleep, rebalancing your nutrients, hormones, all of those things, their symptoms get so much better or almost go away.
Wow.
Sometimes it's a moot point. So there's a lot that we've learned over the years of treating right. tick-borne infections. And I would say we've learned a lot about natural therapies mm-hmm. like herbs. I use a lot of herbs in my practice, which are very safe and very effective, which preserve the integrity of your gut, which is great. So when you use herbal treatments in conjunction with diet and lifestyle and all those other things that we've just talked about, we can get really good results that way.
What's your favorite one?
My favorite herbs?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I use combinations of herbs. I usually don't use just one thing. I use combinations. So there are different product lines that I use, like Beyond Balance is a great company that I work with that has great herbal tinctures. Byron White has really good herbal tinctures. And then sometimes I get creative and I just use different herbs from different companies that have really great products. It depends on the symptoms. It depends on the person and their history, their tolerance, right? Everybody has different tolerance when we start these protocols. It depends on how many infections we're suspicious of or have confirmed.
Right. Got to kill it off. Right.
And, you know, there's lots of other things too. We talk a lot about mold, which is a big sort of issue and one that doesn't get enough attention, but people can be exposed to mold and get really, really sick. Neurological symptoms, upper respiratory symptoms that trigger autoimmune conditions. Mold is a big
Don't you feel like that was like a thing for a while? Like everybody, like they mold, yeah. Black mold seemed like it was a thing for a while and then Lyme took over and no, nobody right. talks about black mold. And before that it was lead.
Yeah.
Right. Like it became like the soup du jour.
Yeah. And heavy metals are still a big deal. Right. In our generation, everybody had mouthful of mercury for a very long time. Now mm-hmm. our kids, right, are mostly composite, which don't come without any risk, but don't have those heavy metals like the amalgams did when we were growing up. Right. And some people get panicked and go to their dentist and say, just drill them out. Well, that's not the proper way to do it either, because you really need to go to a dentist who specializes in removing those amalgams. Usually we refer people to a biological dentist. That's a dentist. Oh, wow. Sort of like been specially trained, almost like an integrative functional dentist, if you will, that has special equipment.
So they, it's like they drape it, right?
Drape, and they're making sure that you're not getting any of those remnants of mercury when they're taking out the drill. They have suction. They have, it's a whole thing. But that's very important that you go to someone who's skilled and not just have someone drill out the mercury because, it can be aerosolized and you can inhale all of that in.
Wow. It is. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
I had another thought. Now I kind of lost my train of thought because I was like so intently listening. What do you think about in the capital region or water quality?
Yeah. So there's been a lot in the news around water quality. Here's the deal. I just don't trust some of our water systems, to be quite honest. And I feel like by the time we know about something going on in the water system, it's been going on for a while and we weren't made aware of it until. So there are a lot of good filtration systems out there that you can consider using. And I use something called, I have a Berkey filter in my house that we use as part of our water filtration. People can get reverse osmosis filtration for their house, like for the whole water system in the house. That's another thing to consider. You know, bottled water is some sort of the same, like how much bottled water do you trust? And then we talk about the microplastics and, we can sort of get into that whole category of toxins as well, which feels a little bit overwhelming, but it's true, right? We have to really get back to basics because these issues that we're sort of experiencing now didn't happen hundreds of years ago, right? It's not that our genetics have changed. It's that our environment has changed.
Everything we're exposed to and put in our bodies.
Yeah.
I have said before on this show, the first time I ever had kind of a lightning bolt kind of a moment. Well, not one of the first times, but a bigger one about that change. My daughter was like in junior high and was really starting to go through a lot of developmental changes. And she seemed young to be going through that. And I thought, well, every kid is different. You know how they talk about that with your pediatrician and stuff, but physically, like it just seemed like overnight and was really like suffered. Like she had a lot of body aches and pains and things like that. So I dropped her off at something and I was driving back through my town, a road that when I was a teenager, we used to walk down to the corner store and all the, in the summertime. So it's summertime and I'm driving behind two young girls walking down the side of the road. And I was like, kind of like thinking to myself, oh, wow. Like I remember doing that. And I remember, they looked like from behind these young ladies walking looked to be, I would have thought like maybe 18.
Yeah.
And when I pulled up next to them, just happened to glance over, they were probably 10 or 11, You could like completely different body shape than what, and it literally was that light bulb moment. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
There's with the food and the development, what's happening. Like they're 10 years old. They look like they're 18.
Yeah.
Physically, and they're basically their bodies aren't able to accommodate that. That's where all of this is happening in the brain and hormonally and everything. Another thing I had done was couldn't understand if you're an active, mom and stuff, why in this day and age, even if you had pretty normal meals, maybe not a lot of added things, why women of this era gain weight or can't, lose the weight. And women of my mom's era, and they'd leave the hospital after having a baby and they were back in their street clothes. Their waists were like, my mother's waist was like a 20, or 19. And they all look like Elizabeth Taylor. yes, there was smoking allowed everywhere. So a big difference. Well, your doctor came in to talk to you with a cigarette and was, part of the Marcus Welby show that they would give you the brand of cigarette that your doctor recommended. But regardless of that.
Yeah.
Big thing. Like I pulled up one day the diets of the 1950s. What was a normal diet and a woman's lifestyle in the 1950s? Completely different. First of all, they shopped every day and they walked to shop, which is again, very European. And they did eat a lot of things more like farm food. They had eggs and bacon in the morning, and like maybe fruit, like grapefruit. But then I think to myself, probably if you ate that now, it's a much purer diet, just what you're talking about, more whole food than the processed stuff. And I think that there was just a thing on the other day that said, the reason that we started gaining weight was because of the Kellogg campaign back in, I think, the 1950s.
Oh, yeah.
And it said that breakfast was the most important meal. It was really to sell more boxes of sugared cereal.
Exactly. That's so bad.
Good campaign, because it still holds true when people talk about that.
Breakfast cereal.
And it's quick and easy, right? And so as we, quote, evolved over time to an environment and a culture that supported working long hours and quick out the door and kids in seven different extracurricular things. And right, that's what we valued, because that's what successful people did or do, mm-hmm. right? That's how we measured success, was how much money we were making, how many things we were involved in, those okay. kinds of things. When in reality, those are some of our unhealthiest people sometimes, because their lifestyle doesn't support what we've just talked about, right? And it really comes down to basics, and you have to do those things consistently. That's the truth.
Yep. So for for our listeners, 2025, it's a new year, and you know, I'm not saying make, you know, New Year's resolutions. What would you recommend though for people to really start to embrace a different kind of lifestyle to improve their health?
I would say, you know, now is the time, you know, because we understand that the things that we can control, like the food that we eat, how we move our bodies, sleep, all of those things, those are the pillars of health. They just need to be done consistently. They don't have to be done to the extreme, right? So I think we're looking for quick fixes, and I could go down another road. You probably know what road that is, but you know, there's now this medication that's stimulating people to lose weight very quickly. And I'm not completely against that medication, but I would say, I would really need to see people putting in this effort consistently, and it doesn't need to be extreme. Just really meeting our basic needs, sleeping, you know, 7 to 9 hours at night, keeping a regular bedtime routine, right? Walking 7 to 10,000 steps per day. You can break that up, and it doesn't need to be super. Right. All at once. And getting steps, right. That can be anything. You can go to a dance class. You can, you know, there's lots of different ways to get steps. It doesn't need to be on a treadmill or a, you know, a track, right. Really just simplifying the whole food piece as much as you can, at least 80% of the time, can make a huge difference for people. So Monday through Friday, really focusing in on whole foods, right? And trying to eliminate.
I like that.
Monday through Friday for most people is a really good track to stay on. It feels doable. And then on Saturday and Sunday or the weekend, be a little more flexible if you're in a situation that you can, right? There are some conditions, health conditions, where you can't, and that's where I encourage people to work with a healthcare provider that can help them that way. But for the majority of us, if you have some flexibility, it feels more doable instead right. of being so strict all the time, right? So having some flexibility on the weekends, when you have that flexibility, most people don't abuse it.
Right, so they don't go hog wild.
They don't go hog wild. They're not binging. They're not, you know, it's not like that. They're like, I know I can do this every weekend, so I'm not worried about it. It's not like I'm going to eat the whole row of cookies, you know, because I can't have it for another month. That's the mentality we're trying to, right?
I would do that.
Hydration is another big deal, right? When we hydrate well, it helps with detox, right? So it helps with our GI tract. It helps with urination, which are both very important when it comes to GI. It helps satiate us, because most of the time we're thirsty and not hungry, but we choose food over water often. it's really important for our hair, skin, and nails. Like, there's aesthetic pieces to this too, right? So hydration is a huge piece of this. And I think if you can do those things pretty consistently, 80-20 for the food piece of it, it feels doable. And it doesn't there's an end point. It feels like more of a lifestyle instead of for the bathing suit, for the wedding, for the... Right. There's no end point. And over time, when you're consistent, if it's weight that's an issue, usually your weight will start to improve over time because you're less inflamed and your hormones are balanced over time because you're meeting these consistent markers every day.
And then you start feeling better. And then when you do eat something that doesn't agree with you, it's just not worth it anymore.
Yeah. The first 6 weeks are always the hardest. Even if you have some flexibility, still feels a little hard. So if you can do it with like people, whether it's a group of friends, your family, try to rally some people in your life that hold you accountable. And that helps a lot too. We talk about
emotionally, and emotionally support you through it.
Absolutely.
Where can our listeners see your information or get a hold of you guys?
So we have a website, Synergy Integrative Health and Wellness. If you Google Synergy Integrative Health and Wellness, you'll see our website pop up. And it's myself. I'm a family nurse practitioner. Jennifer Goldstock is adult nurse practitioner. And Dr. Kirsten Carl is our naturopathic doctor. And we have a nurse. Her name is Melissa, who is a big part of our team and supports all of our patients in the most beautiful way. So yes, we happen to be all women, which is really cool. And if you go through our website, you will be connected to Patty, who is our new patient coordinator. And she'll really walk you through the process and determine who the right provider is for you based on, you know, your situation and your goals and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's a pretty easy process. But
and where are you guys located out of, Natasha?
Yeah, we're in Latham, New York.
Right in the same building as the Salt Cave.
Yes.
Oh yes. Oh my God. Yeah. All the gals, my friends, were all just there the other day.
Yes.
I didn't get a chance to go. Yeah. I love it there.
We share space with a chiropractic practice, Sir Neglia Chiropractic. So
they're amazing too.
And they're amazing as well. Yes.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay. Yes. I've been by that thousands of times.
And I just have to say, we've had so much positive effect in my family because of going to Synergy. I just can't say it enough.
Thank you, Michelle. We love seeing all of you at our practice. So thank you.
I'll tell you something else. Your name has been, which I didn't realize until you said it tonight going on. And I know Michelle's kind of said it, but I probably looked over it fast. Your name has been referred to me over the years, last couple of years, I should say, no less than probably 3 times.
Oh wow.
So yeah, so you've definitely got a calling out there that anybody's talking about health things or whatever, that they'll say, oh, you got to try that. You got to try Synergy.
Well, that's so nice to hear. Thank you. And I would say that's how most people hear about us, is word of mouth. So it's nice to hear that. Thank you.
Very, very good. Well, thank you so much for being an amazing guest and getting us going for 2025 in our healthiest way with you, Natasha. We appreciate it so much, and I hope our listeners enjoyed that. And I want to say thank you to Michelle and to D. Scott, as always, and thank you to our listeners for your wonderful suggestions and your shares and your likes. And make sure you rate us, especially if it's a 5-star. And
only if it's a 5-star.
Only if it's a 5-star. That's what our producer. That's what our producer says. Yeah. And so we'll see you next time.
Yes. Happy New Year. Thank you.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
Thank you.